everyone. I am Jason Dinges. Welcome to Lost Rhetoric, a dim space for light hearts where we discuss all manner of odd. This week, Sean Krogan will be joining me to talk all sorts of stuff, man. Ghosts, spirit attachment, life after death, consciousness, what that could possibly be. What does that mean? You know, I don't know. We talk about how to live the good life and, you know, not leave behind your bullshit for everyone else to deal with. It's a great conversation. I hope you stick around for it. You might know Sean from his bands, Cracker Bash, Junior High, The Pinnacles, his solo work, Sheets, Note Notice, Hell Cows, so many bands and projects he's been a part of, and his artwork in general. It's all good stuff. And I know him from that stuff as well, but I also know him as one of the most talented and sweetest guys I've ever met. So I'm glad he decided to do the show with me. And we had a great conversation. Breaking norms, I am actually recording this intro after the conversation. So I know it's awesome. So please stick around for that. First, let's get into last week. Had an episode with Suzanne Hogan about Jim the Wonder Dog, an amazing Llewellyn Setter from the great state of Missouri, who could do amazing things. He was psychic. He was not of this world. And we did a whole episode about that. So go back and listen to it if you haven't already. It's a very wholesome episode, you know, not so wholesome at parts, of course, but very pet friendly. If you're an animal lover, you're going to love the episode. Just go check it out. It was a really, really good time with Suzanne. So let's get into what we always get into, the top five. Who listened to episode 39 the most? Well, there's a two-way tie at fifth place, Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Spokane, Washington. Same exact amount of listens. So thank you, Spokane and Santa Fe. Also, a two-way tie at fourth place, Columbus, Ohio, and Denver, Colorado, on the same wavelength. So thank you both for listening. Number three, Portland, Oregon. Man, knocked off the number one spot. You were holding on there for a few weeks, and I always appreciate it. Thank you, Portland. Still in the top three. Number two, Richmond, Virginia. Coming in strong. Been in the top three for a while now. So thank you, Richmond. And number one, and new, I think, to the top five in general, Aloha, Oregon. Number one. Thank you, Aloha. And that is Aloha, exactly how you think it's spelled. But around here, we say Aloha. And yeah, thank you for listening, Aloha, Oregon. Really, really appreciate it. Keep it up. And that is the top five, everyone. So thank you all for listening. Thank you all for being here with me. I always appreciate it, whether you make the top five or not. Tell your friends, you know. Maybe your town will make it. That's my only hope, is you tell everyone you know, and your town is represented, and I get to shout you out for being fucking awesome. What else? What else do I normally do? What I've been listening to. What have I been listening to this week? Well, handful of stuff. I'm going to start with Electric Youth. You might know them from the Drive soundtrack, that amazing Drive soundtrack that I think I talked about in the Deja Vu Hauntology episode. Electric Youth seems to fit that Hauntology genre, I guess. But I've been listening to a couple albums of theirs specifically. Memory Emotion from 2019, and they did a soundtrack to a movie called Come True that is from this year. So this is a kind of a brand new album, and it's all amazing. It's all great stuff. If you're into that kind of 80s synth Hauntology vibe, Electric Youth is the band for you. So check them out. Lana Del Rey has a new album out called Chemtrails Over the Country Club. And it's good. It's real subdued, minimal awesome Lana Del Rey. I really, aside from the music, I always love her artwork. I always love her album covers because it's always a photograph and it's always staged and it always kind of sets the mood for whatever the record, whatever you're about ready to listen to. And this album is no exception. I love the album title, Chemtrails Over the Country Club. And the photo on the front and back covers fit that fantasy world that she's creating. But listen to it if you're a fan of hers. It's good and consistent with her awesome output. And I've mentioned them before. Show Me the Body. I mentioned them multiple times, but their Survive EP came out. I mentioned the single a few weeks ago, but the 3-song EP just came out, and my fucking God, is it good. They're like the most innovative hardcore band possibly of all time. It's like, I don't even want to call them hardcore anymore because they're just beyond, but I just think they identify as a hardcore band, but they are untouchable. There's no band to compare them to. That's all I can say. I ordered the 10-inch already. Hopefully I'll get it in the next month. But man, that first song, Rubber Band, my God, haven't heard anything like it, and it's great. Give it a listen. Listen to Show Me the Body all the time. And then there's a few other artists that I kind of got drunk the other night and started playing radio DJ on my phone, you know? So I just want to give a quick shout out to some of my favorites that always come out when I'm in that mood. And that is Nico Case, ASAP Rocky, and Vince Staples. Always, when I'm in a drunk, happy mood, for some reason, those are three of the, I don't know, dozen people that I always go to. And I was listening to them a lot the other night in a very, very happy mood. So that is what I have been listening to. And you can find songs, some selections from these folks on the Spotify playlist by searching LR040, because everyone, this is the 40th episode of the show, and I couldn't be more excited about that. Before I go on any further, I want to give a quick shout out to our cat Nelson, who is sleeping behind me right now. He's usually with me every single recording. You've heard him make appearances by slurping on his body and cleaning himself in a very loud manner, and sometimes snapping the kitty door open or shut when he goes through it. He's 16 years old, and he's an absolute basket case, but I love him. And happy birthday, Nelson. So what's next? Let's get into the exhumed excerpts from the Tomb of the Promulgated. That's when I find an old story, an old report of some sighting or abduction or what have you, and I exhume it and give it some fresh air. This week I've got a little blurb from Saga's UFO. I said that funny. Saga's UFO report from the summer of 1974. This is a pretty interesting one. The headline is Dreamlike Quality. And this is how it goes. Common to all UFO humanoid reports is their dreamlike quality. Also fascinating is the way many contactees reel off the most incredible, quote-unquote, messages. An example is the report of a gynecologist and two industrialists who visited a thoroughbred horse breeding farm at San Pedro de los Altos, about 30 miles from Caracas in Venezuela. A huge UFO landed near them, and two entities descended down a beam of light from the craft. A dialogue took place inside their heads. Remembered word for word by the gynecologist. Parts of the quote-unquote conversation went like this. Question: are there many beings like you among us? Yes, 2,417,805. That's very, very precise. Next question. Have you undertaken interbreeding with us? And the answer is no, but we are studying the possibility. Another question. Have you carried any beings from Earth away with you? And the answer is no, only animals. On Christofix, stated to be the name of their planet, there exists the, bear with me here, Phytozooplanetolijica, the richest in the galaxy, and in which there are species of animals totally unknown to you. I feel sure that you will be pleased to learn that there are also amorphous beings in the galaxy who live by means of chrysotelic ascending neural evolution, although this revelation left the gynecologist and his friends bewildered. Personally, I was relieved to learn that although those entities said they also possessed a wave compressor capable of disintegrating the moon with one discharge, they had left it behind on Christofix. So there you go, folks. A gynecologist and a few industrialists had a conversation with some extraterrestrials from Christofix who were thinking about taking human beings away. There's over 2 million of them, and they can destroy the moon if they want to, which means they can destroy the planet Earth. They can pretty much destroy anything, but they were kind enough to leave it at home. So, man, I'd love to hear from you about that one. Have you heard of this planet Christofix? It starts with a K. K-R-I-S-T-O-F-I-X. Never heard of that before in my life. But very, very intriguing encounter that they had. And that's the exhumed excerpt from the Tomb of the Promulgated. Please write me at lostrhetoricpodcast@gmail.com if you have anything to say about that. If you know of any other stories, I've talked about Caracas a lot, actually, on this show. Seems to be a hotbed of activity back in the day, anyway. But yeah, and find me on Instagram at lostrhetoricpodcast. Like it, follow it, write me a message, do any of that stuff. And get on Apple Podcasts, leave a rating and a review. Now that we're talking shop here, I just got wrapped up into this. 5 stars. Say something. Spread the word of the show. I would greatly, greatly appreciate that. Now, tonight, I've already talked about what we're gonna get into. So let's get into it. Here's me and Sean Krogan. Sean.
Hello, Jason.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Good. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I absolutely can.
Perfect. I almost forgot to start recording there.
Uh-oh.
That's the headspace that I'm in today, man. I'm a bit rattled this morning.
I've felt that way for the past couple of days. I can understand. It's a rattly time.
I know, man. I'm just trying to normalize, you know. I got to sleep in a little today, so that was actually nice. I'm like, I'm going to be refreshed and fresh, and here we are, and I'm rattled.
Well, you know, I think we're having very similar days because I slept in as well, and I was like, I'm going to be ready for this, and I feel like I'm just kind of bumbling around the house, but we're here. We made it.
We fucking did it, dude, and I'm glad you are here. Despite what?
Me too. Despite the fact that we're both rattled a little bit.
Well, it's going to be an eye-opening conversation. My guest tonight, Sean Krogan. I already said it, but I'm super glad you're here. We've been talking about this for the last few weeks, and man, it's a doozy. This is one of the parts I'm kind of a little rattled. I'm still trying to wrap my brain around it.
Me too. I have to be perfectly frank. You know, it's a big topic, and I have to admit, I can't say that my knowledge of it is probably any deeper than anyone else's.
Right. Oh man.
But also, a lot of this is going to be kind of based on only like just kind of personal feelings,
mm-hmm.
which I guess you know is. Unless it's scientific knowledge, that's all it is anyway. But
right,
Yeah. So, and personal experience too. So
yeah, it's
to some degree,
it's a very subjective topic. And you know, so I guess tonight, this is the whole, the jumping off point for the listeners of the discussion we've been having. You said you wanted to talk about, the idea of ghosts being trapped or attached energy, which I've come to learn is called spirit attachment. Mm-hmm. and also consciousness as being something permanent and existing on a quantum level, kind of beyond, you know, brain function and heart function, in a human being. It's beyond the physical body. So is there anything you need to add to that before we get started?
You're right. I mean, the only thing I would add to it is, like, you know, like I go into this thinking that I'm asking more questions than I then maybe I'm bringing, like, you know, deep knowledge of the subject. Mm-hmm. It's just something I'm fascinated by, and I'm fascinated by it because of the fact that, like, the house that I grew up in had, like, lots of weird stuff happen in it. Uh-huh. And my dad was definitely, like, a person that believed in things that you just couldn't understand, maybe, but he was also very cynical at the same time.
Right.
So he could be very much a realist and you know, and like, oh, you have to base things in science. But then he would be like, hey, this weird stuff happened. And sometimes you just can't explain the weird stuff that happens. And because our monkey brains sometimes aren't capable of wrapping themselves around a reality that's beyond our limited scope of understanding.
Yeah. And so your old man, your dad got you interested in these concepts? And
yeah, definitely so. Yeah.
A lot of it's based on experiences you had in your home growing up here in the Portland area.
Yeah. Yeah. I grew up in a house, like, out in Gresham, which mm-hmm. is a suburb of Portland, for those who don't know, that, you know, it was a farm town, but by the time I moved in there, it was a developing suburb in the early 70s. And we lived in a house that was built, like, it wasn't an old house by any means at all. It was built in the late 60s. Okay. So, I mean, now it's old, but at the time it was a fairly new house.
Right.
But almost as soon as we moved into the house, like, my brother and I and my dad all had weird experiences, especially with one part of the house. My brother and I were always really nervous about that, going anywhere near that part of the house. Mm-hmm. And my dad used that part of the house as an office for a long time. And he had weird things happen to him in that room. And then eventually that became my brother's bedroom.
Whoa.
And in his teen years, and I didn't even really fully think about it till many years later. And I brought it up with him and I was like, whoa, like you lived in that room. He's like, yeah, I know.
Was the room upstairs, downstairs, in the basement?
It was like a like, you know, mid-century kind of ranch style. So it was only one floor.
Okay.
It was like a three bedroom house built like in 1968. And the layout of the house was as such that all three bedrooms were in the same part of the house. And there was two bedrooms that, like, at the end of a hallway that were at that time my parents' room and my brother and I's room. But you had to pass this one bedroom to get to that end of the hallway in the bathroom.
Uh-huh.
So as kids, at night, if we would go past this room, we wouldn't even look in the bedroom. We would try to turn our heads and just kind of jump past that door.
Weird.
Yeah.
And why? What happened to make you so frightened of it?
I don't know.
Just a feeling.
It was just a feeling we had. And my dad had, like I said, my dad had experiences. He had, he was an architectural engineer, which is kind of a fancy way of saying he checked blueprints for mm-hmm. mathematical errors.
Okay.
And he had an office in that room with his drafting table. And at some point in time, when my brother and I were little kids, we had given him, like, a matchbox car, which was an old toy that was like a car And it looked like an old, like early 20th century car, like a Model A or Model T or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he had it sitting up on a shelf up above his desk where he would work at. And one day he was working in there and the car just rolled from one end of the shelf to the other and then just rolled off the end of it.
Interesting.
You know? And it wasn't.
Had always been there. It was a nice level shelf. And then all of a sudden.
It was a nice level. Right. And it moved and it fell off.
Wow.
Now, as I get older, I always have to remember to take my dad's stories with a grain of salt because the older I get, the more I kind of wonder how much he was bullshitting us. But I don't think he was. And then part of the story was that my dad said an expletive to whatever spirit that he thought was in the house, more or less saying, get out of here and leave us alone. But it didn't, you know, and my brother continued to have experiences like as a teenager in that room. So that's kind of like, you know, for me, my fascination with the idea of there being ghosts or being some sort of energy that was stuck in that house from either like the previous owner or like something that happened on that spot, that piece of land before that house was even built there.
Right. Go ahead.
Sorry. It goes back. I will say that I do know that like the people that lived in that house before us, it was a single mom and her teenage sons. And I just, from what limited memory I have of being a teenager, I know that there's so much energy and so much kind of frustrated energy that is going on in your body and brain and just in general at that time in your life, that I can almost believe that you could imprint a place with that kind of frustration and anger and confusion.
Mm-hmm.
So I often wondered if it was related to that. Huh. I also know that, you know, there was Native Americans all over that part of Gresham. So that went back for millennia, you know? Right.
Yeah. That seems to be a very American, story. I mean, just North America all over. It's just, I mean, what happened on this property centuries ago, you know, and what is this house built on, you know?
Right. And it's one of the things that like, you know, later on in life, my friends who grew up out in Gresham and I talked a lot about, because growing up here, you knew that there was Native Americans that lived in this part of the world, but it always seemed like they lived on the coast or they lived someplace else. But it wasn't until I got a lot older that I realized that they were all over here. They were all over the place. It was just the time that most Europeans got here from the American East, that they were gone because they'd been wiped out by illness, by sickness. And, so, you know, when people showed up, you're like, oh, look, it's this grand utopia and there's just no one around. It's free for the taking. It was free for the taking because they had been all wiped out by smallpox.
Right.
Not that far beforehand. So there was lots of people that was here and there was lots of stuff that could have happened, including the suffering from watching your civilization die at the hands of something that you basically couldn't see, a germ that was brought by people from the West. So,
right. Yeah, I mean, and that suffering, that human suffering, could have been as recent as, you know, the family that lived there before you, or, you know, it could go back forever, or it could be, you never know. And that's, I guess, what keeps the conversation going with things like this and keeps the mystery alive, is like, what the fuck happened to this place, you know? What? Yeah.
Well, and sometimes I wonder if it's like culminative, like, you know, like the suffering that happened there, maybe on a farm, like in the late 19th century, that was also impacted by the suffering that was there from Native peoples that were dying from smallpox and watching their civilization crumbling around them 100 years before that. And then it gets added to the kid who was like, you know, the late 60s teenager who is in this bedroom and is mad at his mom and winds up getting shipped off to Vietnam and his anger and frustration, weirdness.
Right.
And then I just think about my brother and I, like we were punk rock teenagers in Gresham.
Yeah.
And we were definitely the pariah of the neighborhood, whether we were doing bad stuff or not. So this energy just winds up building and building and building, I think. And sometimes I go like, all right, now does this energy just wrap itself around a space and get stuck there? Mm-hmm. Whether it's like, whether it's a person who's passed or it's a person who just allowed their energy to get stuck there. Because it was so strong.
Right. So that kind of gets into the discussion of the spirit attachment, which I didn't really know about, but you guys think because of your, I mean, if let's say it started with you and your brother and your angst, that angst could leave you a little vulnerable for a spirit to attach itself to you and kind of live in that house. Right. Is that a thought?
I think so. Definitely so. And I think about, you know, I think about where my dad was at in his headspace too. And I think that maybe he, you know, was more vulnerable that to that stuff too, because my mom never experienced it.
Right. It was just you. It was just the boys.
It was the three guys.
Wow.
Yep. It was the three guys. And, you know, and my dad saw stuff move. My brother saw stuff. My brother saw people. I heard things. Mm-hmm. I had weird ghost dreams a lot when I was a kid about people that were in my brother's room, and sometimes they were there to protect us. And sometimes they weren't. There was like friendly things and not friendly things.
Man, it's like a spirit battle going on in your house. You got good spirits and bad spirits.
Absolutely. And my brother, I think it was like the most sensitive of all to us. He had the most dramatic experiences. I mean, we haven't talked about it for a long time, because I think in some ways it was really traumatic for him. Mm-hmm. Cause I mean, as a little kid, we got to a certain age, is like we shared a bedroom, and then it's kind of like, all right, you're 10 years old. Like, you need your own bedroom. Mm-hmm. We're going to move you into the ghost room.
The ghost room. Yeah.
And I think for him, it was probably fairly traumatic to real and or imagined, you know, to have the belief in that, it was a powerful thing for him. So I think that space, like, you know, wound up having a lot more power over us, whether it was the stuff that was all in the frontal cortex of our brain that we were imagining or, you know, making real, or if it really definitely was real.
Right. And yeah, like we were saying, how old is the spirit that's there? Is it something that is new because it's attached itself to the energy of the three men in the house?
Mm-hmm.
Cause I didn't know anything about spirit attachment. And I read this recent article about it. And it was all about how people nowadays, with the pandemic and stress levels, you know, reaching a maximum, where people are more vulnerable now to spirit attachments and to basically watch yourself, you know. And this is like old school, like witchcraft to me. It's like, you know, the whole history of saying bless you when you sneeze is... Mm-hmm. When you're drawn in the air, when you're about to sneeze, like a demon can sneak in there. So you got to say bless you.
Right. You lose your soul for a second. It sneaks out. So before it gets back in, you got to make sure the devil doesn't get in there too.
It's the same. It's the same concept. And they're talking about it today. And like, I think this article was from late 2020, but it's still like, hey man, watch yourself out there and watch your energy, because you can get a little ghost action in your life if you're not careful, you know.
I totally believe in that, and I believe in if you know, no matter which way you believe, if you want to put it all on science, mm-hmm. or if you want to put there's some forces there that we don't quite understand yet, or we'll never understand because we got simple monkey brains, you know, right. Which I always think about. It's like, come on, like we're humans. We're not omnipotent. Like we have limited scope of understanding and we always will.
Right.
So there's things that we just don't see. But anyway, getting back to it, I think that when you're under stress, you know, your mind is open to things that, you know, that it's usually not open to you. That maybe that's illness, mm-hmm. or maybe that's like having like spirit attachment,
mm-hmm.
being yeah. able to that wall is broken down to some degree.
You're just more vulnerable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You just let your, I guess, whatever guard you don't know you have is gone. And the article went on to give 5 suggestions to people to help stay spirit attachment free. If you don't mind, I'm going to list them off.
Please
for listeners. And there, you know, these are just the 5 basic things with no explanation. Of course, there's this is all easier said than done stuff, but control your negative emotions, forgive everyone and everything, including yourself, let your loved ones depart in peace, do not communicate with the deceased, and focus on mental health. So, I mean, that's just good and good advice for life and in general, but.
But I you're right, because I think it gets the other part of the conversation that I wanted to have about like about this quantum idea of consciousness.
Right.
And sometimes I think because this is an idea that I've been thinking about a lot since first communicating with you about this, having this conversation. Sometimes I think if it's true that like our consciousness is more than just like the physical electrical impulses that go on in our brain, mm-hmm. and there's something more to it that goes on, that is capable of going on, of just like something in, I saw like it's almost like your consciousness is rebooted after every life, and you start again with this same consciousness, but in a new time space.
Mm-hmm.
Continuum. But if you get too absorbed in where you're at, if you get too attached to this reality, to this time space continuum, that you could, that part of that consciousness could be trapped here, stuck here, that you don't do what you're naturally supposed to do, which is move on,
mm-hmm.
and take this experience and grow and have your conscious mature as a, you know, so it develops, so you rise, but you just get trapped here at Earth, then that's like a bad thing. You know, you're not moving on in that time stream. You're not moving on. You're reliving that same experience that you're supposed to have passed.
Right. Yeah. That's very, very interesting. Cause yeah, I mean, even I guess on a soul level, and I don't know, I think we'll get into it here in a little bit about what the soul could possibly be, but I've had many conversations about the soul and what happens, where we come from, where we go, and it always kind of boils down to the whole point of life is to evolve on a soul level. Like you are here to I don't know, learn more, or just you have chosen to be here,
mm-hmm.
in this body, in this time, in this place, with these people, and the idea is to like get to just keep growing and growing and growing, and then when your physical body is gone, that spirit or soul, I mean, maybe it comes back and it's attached to you, and you just, you know what I mean? It keeps like evolving and evolving, and it's life after life. And it's doesn't even have to be a human life. It doesn't even have to be in the same country, or you don't even have to be the same species of anything. Just keep learning and growing and growing. And that, and if you're not, yeah, maybe that negative energy and it gets trapped because it's stagnant. It's you know,
it's stagnant, and it's part of the things they talk about, like within Buddhism, like, you know, that the thing that you have to avoid is desire. And I think sometimes it's that desire to, like, I still want to be this person. I still want to be Sean Krogan. I still want to be 20 something years old. It's not like, it's like, no, you don't stay that age. You don't stay this same person throughout your whole life. And you, like you just got done saying, the goal is to grow. To grow emotionally and to become a more mature, complete person. And I see it. I mean, I see it all the time. You see human beings that are incapable of accepting change, mm-hmm. and accepting their own change within themselves, or and change within society or the world. And you know, you become a beast. Instead of being a developed human being, you become emotionally and your soul becomes retarded.
Right.
You get stuck.
Right. And
so I mean, part of me says, like, all right, if you could do that, like, while you're still alive, I think you could do that after you've passed too. Maybe that energy can get stuck on things, and it could have a negative impact on those that come into contact with that place or those things.
Right.
Unless, like you said, you take into a, you put up those safeguards to mm-hmm. keep yourself safe from them. I'm really, really am fascinated and like to read about the cultures that was here previous to white people being here in the Portland area. And that was the prevalent culture was the Chinook people. Mm-hmm. And they talk a lot about, like, ghosts and their power and spirits and what can happen to your spirit based on being in contact with the dead and their spirits. And so to me, it just makes a lot of sense. And, you know, they knew what they were talking about. They yeah. dealt with this stuff all the time. So.
No, I believe it. No, yeah, go ahead. Sorry. Yeah.
No, please.
I think about this stuff all the time too. And I'm not well versed in what the Chinook people believed, but just this whole idea of being like the trapped energy and attachment thing is kind of new to me in a way. But it is the way that I'm looking at it is there's two sides to this. There's the energy that is attaching itself to a human because it's stagnant, it's stubborn, or it's refusing to go, or it's got something to finish, or it's just pissed or trying to cause problems. I mean, who knows? But then there's the human host of this energy that is affected by it. And, you know, I rattled off five things for the human being to do to avoid being, you know, plagued with this attachment. But how do you think this gets resolved? Is it all on the human host to shed this thing, or is it part of the spirit has to learn something, you know, like in the fucking Christmas movie where you got to learn your lessons,
right?
You move on, or you, the pearly gates open up once you figure something out. Is it like a dual purpose?
I don't think so.
Thing, or what do you think?
I don't think so. I think that like in A Christmas Carol, like whatever Ebenezer Scrooge's partner is, I can't think of his name right now, but he's stuck there.
Right.
He has glued himself to that time. And I mean, that's kind of one of the things of, like, you know, don't doom yourself, you know. Hell is what you make of it, and heaven is what you make of it. And I think that you can sometimes I think it's like, it's up to us to kind of like resolve that stuff. I like it because like when I start thinking about this, I could think about it from all these different angles. I could look at it from,
got some buzzers going off.
Yeah. Like evolutionary, or I think about it like mythology. There's so many different ways I get start like kind of looking at it, and it just kind of just opens another door, and it opens another door for ideas. Joseph Campbell was always been another person I've looked up to, and he talks about evolution. He's saying like, you know, reincarnation. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't believe in reincarnation as being something that actually happens. He says, no, you just die. But reincarnation is the way that you impact everybody. And if your personality like develops throughout your life and is a blessing and it helps other people grow to become better human beings, then eventually as a species, we could develop into like a higher brained, higher mm-hmm. functioning animal that isn't trapped by these old ideas, isn't trapped by these old desires. And I can think about it like in that very kind of realistic, scientific, 20th century kind of way. But I can also think about that in the, you know, like, hey, like as that still makes sense, you know, reincarnation as the way that we impact each other. But it also is like, you know, I could still see it as that Buddhist idea where like, as I dive back into that stream where consciousness goes back to again and maybe gets distributed someplace else. Mm-hmm. I take all these experiences in life. I take what I have learned or not learned. If I've stayed like my 15-year-old brain self my whole life, if I'm still selfish, if I'm still just thinking about me, if I never get beyond that, and I'd live my whole life, and I live my life in a lot of pain because I've always desired stuff and I've never gotten over that. And I never kind of became a full, compassionate, emotionally evolved human being. Then when I exit this world, I exit with that energy too. And I take that with me wherever I go. Mm-hmm. And so whether that means like, you know, like I leave that energy behind for some other poor soul to have that get it, you know, especially if I'm clinging to earth,
right?
I'm clinging to my attachment to earth and my attachment to this life and the things I never got that I somehow think I deserve.
Right.
You know, then that gets stuck for somebody to walk into. And you know, if they're in a place where they're fragile and maybe they're emotionally susceptible to those same kind of thoughts and same kind of ideas, then they could attach themselves to you and have a negative impact on you. And so I think that at that point in time, it becomes like using all those tools that you talked about.
Mm-hmm.
About, yeah. You know, and I try to remind myself of that all the time because I'm getting older now and I've looked back on, you know, I'm at a point now where I could look back on my life and look back on choices I've made and some of those choices that were bad choices and the good choices and seen where they've got me. And mm-hmm. so it's up to me now to make something positive, even out of those bad choices I've made in life and not get stuck with those. And yeah. to maybe like use that as a way to be an advisory tool for people that I love, people I care about.
Right.
Okay. Like, look, this is where I messed up and you don't have to do those things too. Like some of that was really fun and some of it was really bad and I can't change it now. I'm going to try to not be regretful about that, but I don't have to make that my whole life. And I don't have to repeat those same things over and over and over again in my life or be outside of this existence.
Right. And when you're gone, you don't need to burden anyone with all your shit that you attach to them.
Which I don't want to do because I love yeah. people and I don't want people I love or people I don't even know to have my burdens right. attached to them.
Some poor stranger's got Sean Krogan's baggage just weighing them down. Like,
right. Like, all right, dude, like I know you did this, like, you know, but part of that's you know, where you know, living with regret is just as bad as almost like living with, like, never getting over, like, living with those desires or living with those things that we can't, that trap us, that wind right. up attaching negative energy to ourselves and to others. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to just be regretful, like, oh, I messed up, or whatever spirit, like, whatever human, like, living that way. What you have to do is to start, you know, not attaching negative energy, trying to find ways out of those negative thought processes. Mm-hmm. I mean, practicing gratitude and those kind of ideas, so that my ghost, my consciousness, my energy, when it exits this plane, it exits, like, in a positive way.
Right.
And its impact just makes people happy.
Right. That's such an interesting, I never really thought about, of the cycle that way, because every religion on the planet basically is like a moral construct, like, just be good and you won't get in trouble or you won't be punished. And what we're talking about is in life and in death, which a lot of people don't think about, is be good and be humble. And the whole death part and leaving behind your negative energy to attach to someone else and keep that negative cycle going is a concept I never really thought about until, like, now, basically. And that's a really intriguing thought, because it's, yeah, live your life as righteously as you possibly can and be good and don't hold on to negative shit and move on and learn. And, you know, of course you're going to fuck up, but, you know, just try your best to be a good person and deterge yourself of all fucking whatever bad things you've done. But in death, don't leave that shit behind for another person. And then we're not talking, like, in your will and physical, we're not talking, like, leaving debt for your family. We're talking, like, your legacy and your morality and your kindness, right, and everything. It's like, if you don't have any of that shit and you're leaving all this negative baggage behind for someone like you and your brother and your dad to experience in their house, like, that can affect generations. Mm-hmm. That's crazy to, like, just, well, then, your positivity goes a long way, you know.
It does. And it's, well, and I think, you know, I through this past year, you know, we've been talking a lot about trauma, and everybody experienced trauma in their life, you know.
Right.
And it's how we deal with that trauma, and if we learn how to get over it. And I think, you know, like, there's generational trauma in this country that goes back, like, 500 years, 600 mm-hmm. years, 1,000 years. I can't remember the writer's name, but he's, like, saying, like, everyone in this country experiences trauma. Like, if you're Black, you experience trauma because of the stigma and the cruelty of slavery. If you're white, maybe your trauma goes back to Europe and the Black Plague that mm-hmm. left us, like, reeling and in such a weird, fragile state that our morality kind of became a messed up thing, and it changed us mm-hmm. for the worse. And we're still kind of, like, figuring out a way out of that and how to deal with those, you know, that trauma. Mm-hmm. And you could, you know, take that down to a lot smaller level, just to within a single life, the trauma that each of us experiences through childhood and our teenage years and early adulthood, and how we choose to deal with that. And
right. Well, and some would say, trauma starts for everyone at birth, like the whole mm-hmm. process of being birthed, of coming to life in this world is traumatic. And, you know, that could affect every single individual on the planet for, if they allow it, you know?
Right. And so the practices to make sure that, you know, we don't allow our negative energy to take over ourselves. Mm-hmm. We don't allow our negative energy to be like a magnet to attract other negative energy. Right. Whether it be, like, you know, other humans or, you know, the trauma that just kind of hangs in the air or attaches itself to a space, or attaches itself to another personality type that's similar. I
know. Just think about how, man, it's like a spider web that you walk into face first, you know, it's like someone's, someone's lingering problems and you just walk right into it and you just, you're unsuspecting, just walking down the street and then boom, you got
there it is.
You got a horrible dark soul attached to you. Just because, I mean, they say, people think that this spirit attachment, it causes a lot of people's problems. I mean, anxiety, depression, insomnia, addiction, and just anything bad in life, and physical problems too. They think if you believe there's a negative spirit attached to you, I mean, you could have digestive problems and headaches and fatigue and things like that. You know, like it's mental affects your physical, and it's all because it all could possibly be because you are kind of a negative person, and then another negative person who's gone latched on to you,
which I could get.
So crazy.
This is the only town I've ever lived in, and people who don't know Portland, it has a really dark past.
Right.
And the cultures that lived here before ours were like part of it. There was a big death cult that was connected with Chinook mythology, a part of the thing, because like death is a natural part of life. And they understood that, but there was definitely like, there was like bad witch doctors and people that could put spells on you. There was people that went around and would steal half of your soul to kill you. And beyond that, like there's like the history here of those people being wiped out. And then all the early Portland stuff, that there's so much dark history with crime and racism and corruption that went on in the city. And this is a young place for like Europeans to be, but you know, it's an old place for people to be. So right. between all the young, new bad energy that just came out of turning this place into part of the United States or whatever, bringing it into the quote unquote modern world. I think it's still here. And I mean, we used to joke when we were kids that, you know, there's a giant well of depression that sits right below Portland, and that's what leaches into the water and it gets to the people that live here and it messes up their brains. Right. And, you know, it was kind of a joke and it was kind of based on the fact that this was a dark and rainy place. But, you know, as I've got older and the people that are my friends that from my time growing up here, we're still saying, yeah, this is kind of a dark place.
Right.
There's a weird energy that is part of this place.
Doomtown, you know, that's what they say.
Right. And they also call it Little Beirut, you know, and there's the names that, you know, that they call this place. They used to call the Willamette Valley the Valley of Death because the Native Americans, and that had more to do with pollen count. At least that's what they say. But but there's a strange energy around this place. And sometimes I wonder if, like, you know, the dark beauty of Elliott Smith's songs or Greg Sage or Poison Idea or the doom metal bands that come out of this town come gather their energy from this darkness that seems apparent, at least to me, to kind of just lie here.
Right.
And, you know,
it seems, I think that's true. And I feel like that's been said about this place. And, you know, it's funny because my current band's called Born a Lot, which is a really stupid way to say, you know, reincarnated.
Right. I like that.
But
that's good that you're born a lot, not just born a couple of times. A lot.
Yeah, just to be, you meet someone that's like an old soul, and you're like, oh, that motherfucker's been born a lot, you know, like shit. Whatever. But we wrote this whole album and then got interviewed, was talking about it. And I didn't really realize it. And I didn't write all the songs because I only wrote like half the lyrics, and my bandmate wrote the other half of the lyrics. And I started thinking about every single song that I wrote. I'm like, they're all about Portland. Every single one of them. And I was like, I didn't know I was affected in that way because I didn't go into the songs thinking about writing about Portland. But it, and they were all kind of negative in a way, like towards the city, and my like I was frustrated and I didn't even know. I'm like, that just came out. And I had this realization while I was talking about it, like, holy fuck, this place has affected me in ways that I did not know that it was affecting me. So I think that's very true about this place. But it's the country in general. It's the world in general. Like the whole world. I mean, America obviously is founded on just genocidal maniacs. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. there's just negative energy just everywhere. And whether you're vulnerable to it or not, I guess is a big question in your existence. But it's definitely there.
It's all over the place. Yeah, you have all these like these pure tentacle like monsters, like you've totally skewed like, you know, what Christianity was supposed to be about,
right?
And brought it here and used it as a weapon against, you know, right, every other human they touched and every other, you know, natural thing they touched.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty messed up.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And like we've been talking about, all we can hope to do to change, to turn the tide is to die with some sort of positive energy so we don't leave our negativity lingering for some other poor, suffering, negative person to stumble upon to make their life even worse because they were having a bad day. You know what I mean? A bad day could be a bad life if the spirit attaches itself to you in this theory, you know?
I agree. I part of my daily practice has to be, you know, because of the fact that I'm from this place and because of the fact that I spent a lot of time immersed in that kind of thought and that negative energy, and I allowed it to attach itself to me for many years, is to constantly remind myself that, you know, it's out there, whether it's locked in my head, back from that bedroom in Gresham, or it's from being in Old Town and some poor sailor that got clunked over the head with a steel pipe so they could Shanghai him, or or the Native American young woman that got, you know, smallpox and died somewhere nearby where I live now, and died angry and sad because of, you know,
right, something happened to them that, you know, is beyond their control, and then they pissed about it.
And sometimes I think it's that kind of stuff too. Maybe you didn't leave like an angry, sad life, but maybe the way that you left this world was angry and sad, whether it was something sudden and unexpected, you know, in the form of a murder or some natural catastrophe.
Right. An accident, a traumatic experience. Yeah. And that these ghosts and these energy could be, yeah, not from a negative person, but someone that was basically wronged, you know, and that's definitely, I mean, a part of it for sure. Has to be.
I think so. I mean, you know, I've been fascinated with ghosts, like I said, since I was a kid. And those were some of the first books that I would check out when I got my first library card, was books about ghosts. And that's one of the things they always say is like, you know, traumatic events, traumatic death is the thing that will often imprint a place.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And that's what we've been talking about with just the founding of this country and basically the world in general, is anything that is traumatic death. If I mean, any at the hands of war of any kind, which is what this whole world is about, it seems.
It's, well, yeah, you know, so far as far as human development, we've always used those methods to advance. But I think that's part of, you know, the great and deep thinkers, you know, wherever they came from, are like, you know, this is the idea, is to get above and beyond those kind of means for mm-hmm. progress. We don't have to keep on doing that. And we can get beyond our trauma and get beyond like imprinting places. Mm-hmm. I live in Northeast Portland, and this was predominantly a Black neighborhood for many decades. And I constantly, as I'm walking around here, I think about the trauma those people endured mm-hmm. because of the fact that they're redlined, and their energy that is still in this neighborhood because of their suffering.
Right.
And so I think, you know, there's a consciousness of the neighborhood too.
Yeah. I feel like stuff like that around town and in a lot of cities and towns in this country, that feeling is definitely palpable.
Yeah. So, you know, we could say like, well, yeah, of course that energy is there because of, you know, cause we're conscious of it. We're aware of it because of our knowledge of history, or just because of the environment. I mean, the economic impacts that are still evident there.
Right. But, and that's not a physical death. That's like a cultural death that lingers and affects people and has a whatever effect it may have on people. But yeah, it doesn't even
psychologically
have to be. Yeah.
So
it doesn't even have to be physical.
Yeah. And you know, I'm going to repeat this over and over again. I mean, I think I said it already. I think there's more that we can't see than what we can see, you know, mm-hmm. our limited capabilities as human beings and our limited tools to experience things. The older I get, the more I realize how limited they are, like my tinnitus in my ears.
Oh,
my glasses get thicker and thicker and thicker. And right. like, even with the tools we build, are brilliant scientists. And I will never, you know, say like, oh, scientists don't know what they're talking about. But I think that there's things that you know, despite all the things that they do know, there's things that they just can't know. And sometimes when they say like, oh, you know, the conscious brain dies with the body. Sure, maybe that's true. You know, maybe you get one go around, but I just think there's just so much more than what we can know.
Yeah, and I fully agree with that. I mean, one of the things that freaks me out more than anything is thinking about dying and then it's just darkness, like nothing, like everything stops. Like that's the scariest thought in the world to me. It's like that could be ego or whatever. It's like it's got to continue. Consciousness has to continue, and that's just me being hopeful. But that's a good segue into this topic that you introduced me to. But I have such a hard time kind of wrapping my brain around it. Maybe you have a better handle on is it Orch or is that how you say it?
I don't know.
Very interesting, super over my head. Orch, OR, orchestrated objective reduction is what it means.
Right. Which to me, I've read a few articles, but my idea, my understanding of quantum physics in general is like so minimal. And that to me is almost like a crazy religion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's like, what? It doesn't make sense. It's a wave, it's a particle, it can exist here and exist there.
It's a human's brain, it's our way to try to make sense of existence, you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
because with all of these near-death experiences and what people have experienced and have reported seeing and feeling, it's just unreal, you know. So it's like my wife has been telling me for months or weeks, tell me to watch that show on Netflix, Surviving Death. And
okay, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I was like, all right, I'm gonna watch this first episode because it was about near-death experiences, and I just watched it last night, and it talks to people who have had traumatic experiences and were basically dead and what they experienced. And this whole Orch or thing was not mentioned, but the whole idea that the brain I guess what Orchor is I'm just going to say it verbatim. It says, it states that the recent discovery of quantum vibrations in microtubules inside brain neurons give rise to consciousness. And they propose that the overall brain function derives from quantum level microtubule vibrations. So they're saying that this quantum information can exist outside of the body and could be what is known as the soul. And it's all about shit. I don't understand about interaction of neurons in the brain. And it says that they are in fact created from the very fabric of the holoverse. It may have been present since the genesis of time. So that it kind of seems like they're trying to say consciousness is beyond the body, right?
That's why I understood it.
Right. And in this Surviving Death show, there's a couple instances where people's fucking hearts have stopped. And one woman was having brain surgery. So her brain function was like dead. Mm-hmm. And they are having conscious, out of body experiences. And they were both, these two women that I'm speaking of, were technically dead for a while, like actually dead. And they were experiencing, one woman was experiencing like beings and basically being told the future, and it all came true. And she suffered catastrophic injuries and had no oxygen to her brain for 30 fucking minutes, but no brain damage. I mean, mm-hmm. she's a doctor now, like she's a fucking doctor, and she, whatever. So she had all these premonitions and they ended up like coming true. Like she was told, she met beings that told her, gave her knowledge, and it was all true. And then this woman having brain surgery had zero brain function. And I think she actually died. So no brain, no heart. And she was explaining the tools that the doctors were using to operate on her. Cause she could see the room that she was being operated in. And even the doctor who performed the surgery is like, I can't understand how she could possibly do that. And it's possibly because consciousness is beyond the body. So when you're dead, you still exist.
Right. And you know, how long do you continue as you before you just kind of the ego fades away and consciousness just becomes consciousness?
Right. And these people actually, I mean, obviously came back to life. So they're still attached to these bodies and can tell these stories. But if they had passed on, we wouldn't get those stories.
Yeah. But there was still that experience, you know, and I think there's a lot to that. I don't.
Yeah.
It
can't explain it, man. This is the thing. It's like, how can you explain it? They're very subjective experiences that a guy in the show, this doctor's kind of described it. He's like, near-death experiences are subjective experiences that are hard to confirm objectively. Like, how can you, and you mentioned this earlier, it's like how it's a very, I mean, it's just life in general. And to quote Metallica, my lifestyle is my death style. But it's a very life and everything else. It's obviously a very individual thing. So
absolutely.
You can't explain what you're thinking in conversation, let alone consciousness as a whole. You know what I mean? Like, forget about it. It's just one of those things that maybe we'll never come to a consensus, but the individual knows because that individual has experienced it, and that is that individual's truth. And that goes deeper into just, you know, human existence. Like, you don't even have to have a near-death experience to know your truth. And if you are convicted and have those beliefs, you shouldn't have to really explain it to anyone if it's a positive thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep doing your thing, and you don't have to get approval from anyone. You know, it's a life is yours, and be good and be a good person. Don't be a fucking asshole. And hope for the best, you know?
Well, and you know, and push come to shove, like, you know, like, do we get one trip around, you know, do I get to come back again as maybe a ladybug or a flower or another person or in a totally other time space continuum?
Right. And do you get to, you know, do you get to choose?
Do I get to choose? Is it like a lottery draw? Do you get,
right,
like you said, do you get to, you do you show up where you're supposed to show up? Mm-hmm. Or is it just, you know, it's just the like one shot and you're done. But either way, like the, I you're right. The idea is to live the good life, to try to develop, to try to that, whether it's one and done, like, hey man, I got my one shot on this planet and now I'm just going to be worm food. But man, when I left, at least I made sure I didn't make Jason's life worse. I didn't make my mom's life worse. I didn't make my brother's life worse. I didn't make my neighbor's life worse. I didn't make the people who live in the next country's life worse. I left this world loving people and concerned for them and hopefully, you know, with some good thoughts and some good ideas that will continue to live on, you know, in this time space continuum, in on this earth, to impact people in a positive way.
Right. That's all you can hope for, man, is having that positive impact that lasts. And when people talk about you after you're gone, they smile and it makes their life better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, mm-hmm. like that's to pass down that positivity is probably the greatest gift you can give to the world.
Absolutely. I just recently a man I barely knew passed away. And I only got to hang out with him a couple times, mm-hmm. but in those couple times I got to hang out with him, I learned, you know, what a great human being he was. He was super curious and giving and compassionate and kind. And so like when I found out that this man that I barely knew at all had died, I was really seriously impacted by it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was like, that's the kind of person I want to be. And that's the kind of impact I want to have on people that I meet. I want them to walk away from that experience with me, whether it's for a minute or 5 minutes or a lifetime, going, that was a good thing.
Right.
And you know, the 2-3 hours I got to spend with this individual have left that impact on me. And that will be with me for the rest of my life. That will be the ghost that I carry from that experience.
Man, that's great. That could, and that, if that were that person's only lasting legacy was that it affected you in such a positive way, that's worth it. That's enough, right?
Right. And
because you spread that too.
And that's what I want. You know, I want to take what he gave me and give that. And you know, recently my stepdad was talking about the death of my father. And he's like, you know, I always really admired your dad because he died really well. Mm. He didn't leave here angry or mad at the world. He left here loving the people he loved. He knew he was going and he didn't try to force himself to stay or, you know, fight any more than he should have fought. And, you know, those kind of things, I never thought about it at the time, but now when I think about it, it's like, oh, like when I finally leave here, I want to leave here bravely, I guess.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And you never know how you're going to react absolutely. And a person that I keep thinking about in popular culture is Chadwick Boseman.
Mm-hmm.
He was making a huge impact while he was alive, and then the way that he died had an even greater impact because he did it so, I guess, gracefully, and he worked until the very end, and you know, he just the way that you, it was just so, so strong.
Mm-hmm. That's, that makes an impact on people.
And that, and people, I don't even know this man. I know I have friends that have worked with him and they've had nothing but great things to say about their experience with him. But beyond that, I don't know this guy. And he had, like, I was affected by his passing because his presence and the way he carried
The way he carried himself out of this world. It's the same. I mean, that's the same way I feel about like David Bowie. Like he makes this record about him, about his coming death.
Right.
I'm getting ready to leave. And he doesn't talk about it a lot. He doesn't, he's not out there like kind of fishing for sympathy or, you know, like, hey, everyone tell me how great I am before I die. So I feel good about myself. He faced it and he kept doing what he did best, which was make beautiful art.
Right.
As with Mr. Bozeman. I mean, they both kind of like, I want to do what I do up until the time I can.
Yeah. And don't worry about me.
Don't worry about me.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm going to die and that's natural.
Yeah. And they're not leaving any of that negative energy for any of us to walk into, as it were.
Right. We're not going to walk down Burnside and get a web full of these guys. You know, if we get anything from them, what we get is their grace and their artistry and their bravery.
Right. And that affects people positively, you know?
And that to me is like, that's reincarnation right there. Like,
yeah.
So if we have more people like that, that we saw on a regular basis, that we're like, you know who I look up to? My next door neighbor. You know who I look up to? The lady who works at the street because of how brave she is or how she faced this obstacle. And the more people that, you know, adopt those kind of, that kind of philosophy in their existence, the better for us all. We'll all evolve. We'll reach that higher consciousness as a species.
That's right.
And I think we can do it. People always say, you know, oh, humans will never arrive at this place. It's like, well, we're never going to arrive at this place as long as we hold ourselves back and say that we can't do it. But if we say, you know, hey, we have our animal brains and we have our human brains, and you know, our selfish side and our compassionate side, it's like, let's just keep on feeding that compassionate side and try to remind ourselves that, you know, selfish nature doesn't have to exist. That nature that is like the mouth that is always hungry, that never gets fed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, man. I mean, it's all about everything you say and that you do in this life is a statement of who you are, but it's also how you go and what you leave behind. Because like I said, I never really thought about it. That negative energy that you leave behind, it is an attachment to some people, that it clings to people and it affects the next life after you are gone, and their life affects however many lives. And that's something to really think about, man, how you carry yourself on a daily basis and what your legacy is going to be. Because if you are not literally a spirit in limbo and not moving on in that regard, your spirit has stayed behind in a negative way. And is affecting human beings. So, I mean, it's either a literal ghost or a figurative ghost,
right?
Of your presence that you leave behind. Either, and each one has an impact.
Absolutely, and you know, if you're someone like me that believes that that literal ghost could actually be there,
right,
and has that power, you know.
Yeah.
Especially to impact the vulnerable.
Yeah, that's some scary shit though, man. It's like, whew.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's, you know, all those calls for emotional maturity and bravery and using. I work with a little boy who has special needs and we're always talking about using our tools, you know, and for him, it's like, it's for his like emotional outburst, but you know, I don't think your emotional outbursts have to be like yelling and screaming. They could be all behind the veil of the mask that we wear every day.
Right.
So if we use our tools to avoid those confrontations with those ghosts or opening ourselves up to those ghosts literal or figurative, you know, that will help protect us as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. It's deep.
Yeah, it is. I don't know. We've been in a crazy year. So,
yeah.
And I think all of us have experienced a lot of loss, whether it's from loss of time or of actual people
mm-hmm.
who have left, or experienced that, you know, we should have had this past year. But I think right now, like, you know, I'm trying to, it's because of the psychological impacts it's having on everybody. I have to be especially aware of those kind of things and guard against them and try to shoot out as much positivity as possible. And there used to be a man in this town that would go around and beat up all the ghosts that he saw on the street. I still see him on occasion, and
oh man, I don't know if I've ever seen him.
Well, I used to kind of just laugh about it, but the last couple of times I saw him, I just said, thank you, man. Thanks for, you know, helping us all out.
That's great.
You're putting yourself on the front line. Like, the rest of us are just walking by and not realizing, like, you know, the impact they're having on us, but you see them and you take care of them.
Wow, so, man. Does this guy have like a spot that he's always at, or is he just all around town fighting ghosts?
This guy is all over the place.
Okay.
Man. I've seen him all over town. I don't know his name, but he's been a fixture in Portland for many years. But yeah, I always just called him the ghost fighter.
That's awesome. I gotta meet this guy. I gotta see this guy.
Yeah.
Maybe I have, and so I just didn't know.
Right. Sometimes now, when I'm out, you know, I try to do my part. If I feel like there's some bad juju around, bad vibes mm-hmm. around, it's like, I'll take a couple shots at him. You know, I'll take a swing, like, get the hell off our street, ghost. You're not going to get my neighbor today. Like, you're not going to get into those little kids' heads. No way, man.
Oh, man. That's so
you
good.
You old dirty bastard. Yeah.
I love it. It's like, I mean, you, some people might think you're absolutely batshit insane, but.
And maybe I am.
You're fighting the good fight. You're fighting the good fight.
But I'm and for me, I figure, you know, maybe I'm batshit insane, but maybe not. Maybe, you know, I took care of it. And right. Like you said earlier, it's about your own reality. It's about your own belief system. So, you know, I'm never gonna call myself any kind of, well, I wouldn't anyway, because I'm a white guy. I wouldn't call myself a shaman or any kind of, you know, healer or any of that kind of stuff. But, you know, I will be the white guy that has a belief system that accepts all these other kind of ideas. And if I see a ghost on the street, I am not gonna be too shy to say, you know, hey, get out of here, you stupid ghost, and leave these people alone. Unless, of course, it's a good spirit that's, you know. But right. you can usually tell that good energy when it comes your way.
Yeah, if it's a good spirit, maybe just give it like a wink and a nod and like a
wink and a nod,
a little like finger gun and
right.
Don't have to make a scene about it.
No, I might even bow my head to it as well.
Yeah, you know, anything just to acknowledge.
I mean, it's all about acknowledging the good and acknowledging, you know, recognizing the negative. So
once you start talking to it out loud, though, that's when people are going to start wondering.
Well, it's too late then. I'm already talking to it out loud. I've been in this city long enough now that, you know, I really just don't care what people think about me anymore. So,
hey, man.
And hey. It's in that regard,
good.
I want to be kind and good. I you know, they can think I'm crazy. I just don't want them to think I'm mean or cruel. Well,
yeah. If you, hey, you could be the next generation of the man out there fighting the ghost. You could pick it up when if he passes, you could pick it up for him. And it's like, hey, look, there's Sean. I love that
there
guy.
There he is.
He's out there fighting for us.
Well, you know, I just like to, at some point in time, there's going to be when Portland gets itself a little bit more cleaned up again. There's going to be a whole slew of young people out on the streets again, mm-hmm. making the city interesting and doing like what the people that a little bit older than me did to start making Portland interesting when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to have their whole new scene going on downtown. And so I just want to be that weird old man who's out there fighting that in 30, 40 years, they're like, there used to be a guy in Portland that beat up ghosts downtown and kept the streets safe for us kids to go to our show. So
that's right. That's something to aspire to, you know. It's like,
well, it's that continually positive energy.
That's right.
And you know, and I'll hopefully like some of my ghost fighting energy will affix itself to some buildings or
yeah,
some piece of my personal property that will get picked up a Goodwill or something.
Right. So. Yeah. And who knows how many properties and people you're actually saving from being possessed in a way, you know?
I hope it's just so. I hope.
Good to think about. It's good. That's some good vibe stuff.
It's whether it's the ghost fighter or it's like your professor that you had in college that mm-hmm. really was a positive impact on you, or a relative or a musician. Those ghosts are around us all the time. So
absolutely.
So yeah.
And there's literal records of some of them. So that's really nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Then that's kind of, you know, those are the other ghosts that we carry around with us. So mm-hmm. in our heads.
That's right. Well, hell yeah, Sean. Is there anything else you wanted to bring up on the subject, or do you think we got it?
I think we got it, Jason. I don't know. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. How about you?
I'm feeling pretty good about it, man. That was great. I really feel like I learned some stuff, and there's some new ideas in my brain that I think have affected me in a positive way, which I really appreciate. So thanks for bringing up the subject to me.
Oh no, thank you for wanting to do this and yeah, talk about man. It. Cause I these are ideas that I need to constantly be talking about as well to help keep them alive and right. you know, being fruitful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. Just got to throw it out there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you know, you are an artist and a musician. Before you go, is there anything on the horizon for you that you want to let people know about?
Yeah, sure. Why not? I started a band a while ago called The Mistons. And we have an album coming out around in May. I guess it's going to be out like digitally in May. And then we're having physical copies made too. But because of pandemic stuff, it's just taking everybody a lot longer to
right.
get stuff because of supply chain. So who knows when that will finally get done. But it will be available to listen to sometime in May.
Great.
Yeah. So that's the thing I'm most excited about right now. And I'm always painting. You can check out my stuff on Instagram and under my name, Sean Krogan. And yeah.
Great. Yeah. I'll post links on the show notes for the episode so people can check your art and music out for sure. Cause it's all great.
Thank you, Jason. That's yeah. very kind of you to say.
No worries, man. I'm just glad you're here. And of course, if you ever want to come back, if there's anything that you really want to just get off your chest and it's bugging you, I'll talk to you about it.
Okay, absolutely. I would love that. I love talking with you, and I miss getting to see you on a regular basis. So
I know. Soon enough, man. Soon enough, we'll all be just, you know, walking around town fighting our own ghosts. And you know, when we're on a little break in between rounds, we can have a beer or two, you know?
That sounds good. Yep. I'm going to get my incense out and start walking around the streets, getting them cleaned up. So when we're finally ready, we can all come out and party together and have a good time.
Hell yeah, man. Can't wait, dude. All right. Well, until then, yeah, be safe, have fun. And yeah, I'll talk to you soon.
All right. It sounds wonderful, man. You as well.
All right.
Thanks, love to Sean. The family.
Well, yeah. Thank you. Appreciate it.
A pleasure.
All right. Bye, Sean.
Bye-bye.
Okay, there it is. There it was. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. And I hope you take away the sense of positivity that I took away from it. It's deep stuff to talk about. but important stuff to talk about and think about, you know. It's hard to wrap your brain around what you should be doing in this lifetime to maximize it, you know. And it's hard to commit and just live that life that I'm sure deep down all of us want to live. And yeah, just committing to the point where you actually go out on top and leave those good vibes for others to bask in and use to motivate themselves and hopefully others, and just the positivity just spreads and just keeps going for years and generations. That would be excellent if we could all achieve that instead of the opposite of leaving the negativity behind for others to feed off. So yeah, man, that was a great conversation. Really, really got me thinking about quite a few things in my own personal life, you know? So, I'm a changed man, folks. Just saying. And I hope you changed as well. but yeah, man, that's it for the night. And thank you, Sean, for being here. I'm going to post some links on the show notes for this episode to Sean's art and his music. So look out for that and check it out. I hope he comes back. It would be absolutely wonderful. And that's it for the week, folks. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for listening. I really, really appreciate it. And like I always say, get on Apple Podcasts, rate, review, follow me on Instagram, email me, lostrhetoricpodcast@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you guys. It's always a pleasure to create these episodes for you. And that's it. I will talk to you next week. But until then, please, everyone, stay sane, stay safe, and stay positive.